from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 4, text number 33. Hiranyakashipu terrorizes the universe. So in this way we're continuing the Unit 1 of the Module 1 of the Bhakti Vedanta course, studying the final six cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam by the grace of Srila Prabhupada. And of course, we have been hearing how Hiranyakashipu has terrorized the universe. Lord Brahma has approached Lord Vishnu, who has answered their prayers, although invisibly seen. They've heard the voice of the Lord vibrated, describing that they should continue hearing and chanting about the Lord's glories, understanding that the Lord is always present. He's never absent. As long as one is always thinking of the Lord, especially by hearing and chanting. And they should be patient, and when the Lord is ready, he shall surely stop the activities of Hiranyakashipu. And the Lord has indicated that you know, persons such as Hiranyakashipu, who are envious of the demigods and the Vedas, the cows, the Brahmanas, the Vaishnavas, religious principles, and ultimately the Lord himself, they will be vanquished. And especially if they come to the point where they cause trouble to the very dear devotees of the Lord, then of course things come to a grinding halt for the demoniac mentality. And we're hearing all about the seriousness of Vaishnava apparat in this regard. And so the Lord had reassured the demigods in the heavenly planets, and they felt confident that Hiranyakashipu was as good as dead. So then we're going to hear a little bit more about Prahlad Maharaj, how it is that by offending such a personality, what is his qualities that makes him so protected by the Lord to bring such an immediate destruction of Hiranyakashipu's nefarious activities. Well, we hear first of all that in verse number 30 that amongst the four wonderful, well-qualified sons of Hiranyakashipu, Prahlad was the best. And because he was a reservoir of transcendental qualities, not material qualities, transcendental qualities, because he was an unalloyed devotee of the personality of Godhead, and of course, without having, that is a symptom of one becoming. Prabhupada, you know, would discuss again and again, you know, the symptom of becoming elevated, you know, in devotional service is that the bad qualities disappear and the good qualities come. If we don't see that, then one can directly, you know, measure that one's advancement is, you know, hampered and stops at a certain level. We can't pretend, Now, this is the wonderful thing about ISKCON, or, you know, a spiritual movement of the Lord, is you can't actually pretend to be, you know, more advanced spiritually than what you are. On the material platform, you can. You know, materially, you can be anything you want to be. You can be a hero. I mean, you know, it all comes out in the wash later on, you know, after, you know, so many years. But sometimes people hold, you know, it's just like Captain Cook. We've been worshipping him in Australia as one of our idols of worship for, you know, since I, you know, was growing up in school and probably way before. Of course, now we don't hear so much about Captain Cook because, you know, some of the information that we never heard in school is that a lot of places where they went because of their sexual appetite, they spread syphilis and death to the natives of the various countries where they visited and, you know, wiped out, you know, whole populations of people with different diseases, you know, and caused so much trouble through sexually transmitted diseases. So, you know, gradually that hero status took some hundreds of years, but it sort of disappeared. So it all comes out in the wash, but especially in spiritual circles, one can't go too far because the checks and balances are there by the Lord. One has to have the transcendental qualities. Therefore, Prabhupada, you know, will say from time to time that it is very dangerous to imitate an advanced devotee. Very dangerous. Because one is dealing with the very powerful spiritual energy. And if one deals with the... And Prabhupada would also say, always remember that you're dealing with God. Always remember that you're dealing with God. So, you know, as a devotee, you know, the service we're doing, and this is his temple, you know, we're coming into his palace, we're dealing with God. And therefore, you always have to be very careful. If one has the transcendental qualities, that's the checks and balances, just like shyness is the control valve for women. The transcendental qualities is the control valve for devotees to protect them from doing something they shouldn't do. So, you know, there is, and those, one with the transcendental qualities, if there's an etiquette to follow, then they can follow it. See? And sometimes people can't follow an etiquette because they don't have the transcendental qualities. So, you know, just to give a practical example, say, you know, we go into the temple room in the morning and it's time for kirtan. Now, there's two things can happen. The person who thinks they may be the most qualified may rush out to do the kirtan. Or another thing that could happen is that the devotees may look around to spot a nice devotee that they like the transcendental qualities of that devotee and the purity they're chanting and ask them to please, you know, come forward and do the kirtan. So a person lacking the humility can't follow that etiquette, you see. They're like, you know, they call it biting at the bit. What's that? You know, they're sort of, you know, the eagerness overrides, there's no humility, you know, or very little. So, you know, the eagerness to have some attention or to, you know, show their overrides. So therefore they can't follow the etiquette even if they know it's there. They can't. You know, they can't stop themselves. They've got to do it. We have a discussion here. So we had a new girl the other week. She may come back. She's busy some weekends, but she said, can I come and sit in class? And I said, yes. Remember this, that, you know, many of these devotees have been doing this for many years. Don't ask too many questions. You may not even ask, you know, you might just not even ask any questions in the beginning. Until you sort of get a feel for the class, the questions. The devotees have been doing this for some time. They know how to stay on context and what have you, and ask questions which are very relevant, like that. Otherwise, you may even be a disruption without even knowing it. She said, "Oh, that's very hard," you know, because she has a tendency. She loves to ask different questions, but the thing is that. She did very well. She didn't ask any questions, which for her, I know, is very unusual. She didn't even make any comments. So that was really good. That's transcendental qualities in that practice. But without some transcendental qualities, a person can't do that. They've just got to, be heard every 5 minutes. They've got to be heard. You know? They've got to throw their tuppence worth in, as they say. You know what tuppence is? Tuppence is 2 cents. You know, two pennies you... tuppence, as sort of a slang, a threepenny bit. Sometimes that, you'd buy a car and they say, does it turn well? Yeah, it turns in a threepenny bit. You ever heard that? Probably haven't. Three pence or 3 pennies is a threepenny bit. A little tiny little coin like that. So if your car turns in a threepenny bit, it's a good car. But so, tuppence is like, very practically, it's a little coin that you never even use. It has such little value that it's there, but you don't ever use it because you can't buy anything. So people like to throw their tuppence worth in. So these are different sayings you might pick up, from that. Have you heard those? No. I get them all from my mum. I sit out on the porch with my mum and I pick them up and I have a good old laugh. She literally tries to have a new one for me every time I come. So, there's a lot of irony or, wisdom sort of in them. But, without the transcendental qualities, you actually can't follow the etiquette. So the etiquettes are there. If you have the transcendental qualities, you can follow the etiquettes very easily, very nicely. And very exemplary.
Prabhu?
Yeah?
I can't understand why you told Mataji not to ask questions. I'm trying to understand that. Because we all ask questions. Mm. So I was wondering, what you're trying to say is that sometimes asking our questions would be disruptive in the class. So we could also do the same thing. I didn't understand that, these people have been here for some time and they know it. Can you just explain on that?
Yeah. So, for instance, we might discuss that, the Supreme Absolute Truth has 3 features, Bhagavan, Paramatma, Brahman. So if I make that statement, everyone here is very familiar with those 3 terms, yeah? And you probably wouldn't ask me, what's Brahman? So, but a new person may... Can you tell me what Brahman is? So then I may have to spend 5 minutes on that. So then even if they've been to classes, even it doesn't necessarily mean that they've sort of grasped it, and then I might go to the next part of the paragraph of just what I might say in a few and say another term, which they may ask me what the meaning is. In this way it will slow proceedings down for what's commonly understood for, most of the students here. So, but, when there are questions, even if the class has a a reasonable understanding of something, but if one of the students has a good understanding of what most of us have an understanding of, but there's something that doesn't quite, they haven't quite grasped, then it's worth answering that so that we're all going along at the same level, no one goes behind. But we certainly don't, if someone just really is lagging behind, they're better off to just listen over the course of a few weeks or months, and they will pick up generally very quickly to the level. But so we discuss these things, transcendental qualities. People with transcendental qualities can follow certain etiquettes, and those etiquettes allow one to associate with the personality of Godhead and advanced devotees without causing grave mistakes, on the path of devotional service. When I perform a ceremony and invoke the sacred fire, I always explain to everyone that I'm now asking the Lord to appear within the sacred fire. I don't just sit there and chant the mantras. Just like if we were to ask the Queen of England to come in, sit in here and join in our class, but none of you knew what the Queen of England looked like, and she just walked in and sat down, that would be my offence if people just didn't, I should let people know someone of great significance has just walked in, and there are certain etiquettes we should, acknowledge her presence like that. So by letting people know that I've invoked the personality of Godhead, so then I'll watch them, and they actually start putting their phones away, and they ask the children to come and stop playing and sit down. So it changes everything because they're dealing with the personality of Godhead. So there are certain etiquettes that are there. It also means that they don't have a tendency to just touch all my things, because they understand, well, I've asked the personality of Godhead to come there, so that's a big thing. So all these things are for that, they're for that purpose. Otherwise, what can happen is that the kids can just come and start grabbing things, and the parents won't even, they don't even bat an eyelid, because the kids play with everything. They just, so the kids pick up the wooden spoon, start licking at it, things like that, So then they won't let them touch everything, see? So they understand it makes a difference. There's an when you understand the person who've got it is there, then people start following etiquettes. And they follow those etiquettes to the ability to have good qualities and knowledge. There's an incident on the news a couple of weeks ago. I think it was the Queen may have visited Canada or something like that, or maybe the Canadian president visited the Queen, but. As they were coming out of the building and they're walking down the steps, because she's 90-something years old, and I think her husband is 99 or something, but the president of that country put out his hand and held her arm to help her down the stairs. So, that's been broadcast all over the world as a big no-no. Because the etiquette is she's such an important person that unless she reaches out her hand that you can touch her, you can't touch her, even to help her. because we had one, our Prime Minister, one, so he gave her a pat on the back, probably a bit too low as well. And he's never heard the end of that. You know, it's sort of like the scar of his whole political career. But so we always have to remember we're dealing with the personality of Godhead and there are certain etiquettes, and to follow those etiquettes protect us from doing something stupid. You know, and when you're dealing with powerful people, you know, if all of a sudden the Queen says, "Oh, you know, he was a very vulgar man, that your Prime Minister was," you know, it means a lot. You know, it means a lot. One word like that. So so we're hearing about Prahlad Maharaj, and this is very important because it helps us to understand what the transcendental qualities are, what the Vaishnava, and then we'll see his behaviour, what are the Vaishnava etiquettes, and this is how it gives us an understanding of how we can you know, we can see where we need to head as to becoming a Vaishnava. Because, you know, when we hear about the qualities of Prahlad Maharaj, you know, we get a glimpse, you know, what a Vaishnava is. You know, we like to think, you know, we are Vaishnavas, that, you know, we are aspiring Vaishnavas. I remember one time, I think it was in Perth, he was a temple president in Perth, not at that stage when Prabhupada came, but later he was, when I was there. And Prabhupada used to do this thing with his disciples where Prabhupada would become the would present the materialistic or even demoniac you know, opinion, and then he would get his disciples to defeat him like that, you know? So that they would present, so he was practicing with them. It was like a, you know, lion, you know, fights with the cubs, you know, teaches them to fight. So at one stage this Prabhupada disciple joined in and he said, "Prabhupada, as Vaishnavas, you know, we're of the opinion..." "As Vaishnava? You are not Vaishnava. Fall down the drop of a hat." You know, but very quick, you know, don't say, "I'm a Vaishnava" in front of Prabhupada. You know, who wouldn't even consider himself anything more than an aspiring, you know, Vaishnava. My Guru Maharaj is a Vaishnava. You know, me? No, I'm trying to be a Vaishnava. So, as we hear the various qualities here, we'll get the understanding of Vaishnava and what we're sort of aiming for. So, we heard that... I'll just read verses 31, 32 again... And then we'll go into the other ones. We heard, first of all, that the qualities of Prahlad Maharaj. He was completely cultured as a qualified Brahmana, having very good character and being determined to understand the absolute truth. He had full control of his senses and mind. Like the super soul, he was kind to every living entity and was the best friend of everyone. To respectable persons, he acted exactly like a menial servant. To the poor, he was like a father. To his equals, he was attached like a sympathetic brother, and considered his teachers, spiritual masters and older godbrothers to be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was completely free from unnatural pride that might have arisen from his good education, riches, beauty, aristocracy, and so on. Text 33. Although Prahlad Maharaj was born in a family of Asuras, he himself was not an Asura, but a great devotee of Lord Vishnu. Unlike the other Asuras, he was never envious of Vaishnavas. He was not agitated when put into danger, and he was neither directly nor indirectly interested in the fruitive activities described in the Vedas. Indeed, he considered everything material to be useless and therefore he was completely devoid of material desires. He always controlled his senses and life air, and being of steady intelligence and determination, he subdued all lusty desires. Now, Prabhupada launches into his purport with this statement. From this verse we discover that a man is not qualified or disqualified simply by birth. So he was born in a sure birth, yet he possessed all the good qualities of a perfect Brahmana. Anyone can become a fully qualified Brahmana under the direction of a spiritual master. Prahlad Maharaj provided a vivid example of how to think of the spiritual master and accept his directions calmly. So, and you'll see the different mood here in the Srimad Bhagavatam compared to the mood, you know, in Hinduism. So you'll see a very distinct different mood between the mood of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the mood of Hinduism. Here, anyone can become a qualified Brahmana, they accept a bona fide spiritual master. In Hinduism, that's, you know, back in the 70s, early 80s, when we were, as Hare Krishnas, the Hindus didn't really accept us. You know, that was come later, many, many years later. But, you know, there was an odd member from the Indian community who did. Possibly because they didn't fit in with the Hindus themselves. But,
So, one question from previous verse, from the last. After we discussed about the different Brahmanical qualities, and then how we spoke about when mature Vaishnava possesses these qualities, and that's a sign of advancement.
Yes.
On the side, to the extent he possesses these qualities. I was wondering. So when we are to measure our own advancement, or how exactly do we measure based on these qualities, and also would that be necessary from these standards? Would that be necessary to see others' advancements for the only reason that, you know, how a devotee is supposed to respect the senior and take guidance and have friends with equals and guide the juniors? So if the advancement is based on these qualities, then we would need to know others as well before we take guidance or we give guidance.
Yeah, that's why, Srila Prabhupada, asked us to commemorate every year the disappearance of Jayananda Prabhu. Prabhupada considered that, you know, all the Vaishnava qualities were very nicely present in such a person, so much so that devotees forevermore should, recognize his spiritual qualities. And the interesting thing about someone like Jayananda Prabhu is, again, he's not distinguished because he was sannyas, big manager in ISKCON, great scholar, nor particularly great kirtaniya, not not known for being a great musician. So his birth was, you know, Western birth. So really, none of those cloud the issue. So really, when you look at him, you just see the good qualities and the good activities. You know, you don't wrongly think that he's being commemorated for some other reason like that. You know, really, when you hear the pastimes of Jayananda, you just hear about good qualities and powerful compassion and humility. So Prabhupada is pointing out devotees like this. You know, look at them. They don't have to be, you know, the standard. Who's a big devotee? Look at this type of devotee. Then you'll see how to, you know, the qualities that, you know, impress Prabhupada. So because you know, as in every religious movement, the tendency is to look for the wrong milestones. You know that. You know, to develop the good qualities means, you know, I have to become sannyas, I have to become big manager, or I have to become big kirtaniya. You know, it's an interesting phenomena I find in ISKCON now. I don't know how long it will last, but, you know, if you're a good musician and a good singer, you're very quickly elevated to the stature of a very big devotee in ISKCON. And I find something wrong in that. I mean, I don't see that as one of the qualifications we should necessarily, but that is what people imitate in order that if they get that sort of recognition as a big, you know somehow a big kirtaniya, they're with a big kirtan band, you know, associated with this Maharaj or that one, that somehow that they've reached the perfection, they've reached the top. Now they're a Vaishnava, a good quality Vaishnava somehow. but that's not correct. Because what we've done in ISKCON is that, you know, we dovetail things so that we attract people. So sometimes, you know, if devotees go out and do really nice kirtan, the general audience, the general mass of people may not necessarily be as attractive. It may not be as the musical embellishment and melodious voices may not be there. But, you know, if there's some, you know, girls nicely dressed and more musical instruments and, you know, the best singer there, then people pay a little bit more attention, which is good. So we tend to, you know, throw them in as, well, you're the only ones who'll be doing the kirtan. You know. Because you've got to, you know, so therefore, you know, there may be, you know, different devotees that get overlooked who can sing very nicely, you know, nice pure kirtan. They won't even get in the kirtan, you know, because they may not necessarily have the musical abilities. So there's a problem there, you know, and that may be good on the street, but then if you bring that into the temple room, that even the nice devotees, who, you know, actually very advanced devotees, are not doing kirtan unless they've got some musical ability, then you've got a problem. So already you see that even within ISKCON, we're not making this comparison, we're making other comparisons. So, you know, Jayananda is a very good example because, you know, he's not known that... You know, we know that Vishnu Jan had a beautiful voice and, you know, he was very expert, you know, a singer. He was a very attractive person as well. Jayananda was none of those things, but Prabhupada, you know, particularly wanted us to commemorate Jayananda because he saw, okay, all the externals are not there that you're going to mistake for what I'm pointing out as a Vaishnava. You know, there's just the good qualities, the Vaishnava compassion, the humility, and that unalloyed devotional attitude and complete surrender. You know, so look at that. So yes, that's what we should look at. And you know, the qualities that we're reading here, we see those in the persons of Jayananda. We don't necessarily see them in every big kirtan devotee who's up on a big pedestal in ISKCON. We sometimes don't see it in the big managers, and we sometimes don't even see it in the sannyasis. you know, but I mean, generally, you know, people are awarded, you know, positions and sannyas and what have you because of you know, the recognition for good qualities. I mean, generally, but it's not an absolute factor. You know, people can. Sometimes there's no one else to take a position, so, okay, you take the position. That doesn't automatically elevate that person to it. You know. It's the same mentality as, you know, we take people from overseas who come from war-torn countries, and we place them in a nice neighbourhood. Now you're a good person in a good country, like that. No. They'll go out and they'll smash windows, they'll break in, they'll rob everything, they'll beat people up, they'll stab people, they'll rape the girls, like that. So it's the same. You can't just put a devotee in a big position and say, now you're a big devotee. As Prabhupada says, that's very dangerous. It's actually not a good practice for ISKCON to do. If we do that, we're setting that person up for a big fall, and we're setting the community up to be disillusioned. Because when we place someone in a situation above their ability, above their level of advancement, and then that all sort of, you know, hell breaks loose. Not only is it detrimental to them, but then the community who's looking up to them, a lot of new people, then they see that person and they think, oh God, you know, what's wrong with this movement? So it's a very dangerous practice for that person and for the community at large. So it's important to, you know, recognise these qualities from the Bhagavatam. You know, we're here studying the Bhagavatam, but not everyone in the community is studying the Bhagavatam. Therefore, what are they looking at when they look at for advanced devotees? If they haven't studied the Bhagavatam to understand, to know how to recognise, what are they, you know, recognising who's advanced, not by this, so there must be some other criteria. And, you know, you can name it, you know, oh, music, you know, play Madanga, you know, nice voice, good looking, you know. But so many things, you know, position, colour of the cloth, you know. So many things. But that, you know, it goes on. You know, it's surprising. I was in a meeting with Anirudh Prabhu and a couple of others the other day. We were talking about, he's asking me, because we're computerising the, you know, getting it all systemized for the ceremonies and things. You know. And so he's asked me what I do, and I was going through all the different things, and one of them was the Pumsavam, you know, where you ask for a male child, you know. And they all went, what? You know, devotees are, you know, they're praying to Krishna that the child be a male one, you know, it's like as if a female child is a Vaishnava. And I said to them, and you know who does that? The ISKCON families. I don't think I've had a request out of ISKCON to do that. It's only in ISKCON. Yeah. So
they have a special ceremony to get a male child.
That's what that, yeah, that's yeah, it's quite
but it's part of the samskara, right? Generally in the samskara they do.
Yeah, it is. It's a samskara. I mean, you know, if you're...
What's the name of the samskara?
Pumsavam. Yeah. But, yeah, it's you know, because in the Vedic era, having a son is a whole different thing, because women didn't inherit anything in the Vedic era. There was no inheritance for a woman. They got a dowry.
Even now.
What's that?
Even now.
Even now.
Things have changed.
Things have changed, yeah. But some, there obviously, yeah, still goes on, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you want a son, otherwise who are you going to pass? Even if you got, you know, if they got a daughter, oh, you're not getting it, you know. Haven't got a son, who will I give it to? But, you know, so it's an interesting thing that ISKCON devotees, you know, are praying. You know, so I was saying to Andrew Prabhu that I try and talk them out of it, you know. I read the Bhagavad Gita, you know, this verse here. Whenever I do that ceremony, I always read this one verse, the same verse. And if I do housewarming, I like to read the verses which describe that, you know, devotee, not attached to any residence, and home, family, wife. And because I'm not there to teach them to be attached to things materially, you know, I've got to adjust their consciousness before they start praying for things. As because I'm invoking the Lord, you know, and then I'm responsible. Here's the Lord. Oh yeah, can I have a big bag of lollies and I'll have a pony with a unicorn. Sorry, Vishnu, I should have asked them what they wanted before I brought you here. He says, verse 17 of the 12th chapter. Yuna Rishiti na dvesti na shochiti na kangshiti. Shubha Shubha Prityagi Bhaktimam Yasame Priya. One who neither grasps pleasure or grief, who neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things is very dear to me. So this is, Krishna's describing these as the transcendental qualities. In this purport he says, a pure devotee is neither happy nor distressed over material gain and loss. So we heard these qualities about Prahlad as well. Nor is he very much anxious to get a son or disciple, nor is he distressed by not getting them. If he loses anything which is very dear to him, he does not lament. Similarly, if he does not get what he desires, he is not distressed. So, you know, there's no preferences for a devotee. According to what's auspicious and inauspicious. It's auspicious to have a son, you know, it would not be as auspicious to have a daughter. The devotee doesn't even think in those terms at all. Especially because either can be a devotee, you know. So then, you know, again, my question is, then, are the devotees who are praying in such a way, are they actually reading the Gita?
Well, Maharaj Dashrath performed the Putra Kamishti and Gita Sutra.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, in the Vedic era, you know, the son is required. They do the Shraddha, they offer the Pinda, you know, when someone, because the daughters can't do that. You know, the son has to do it. The very word putra, pu means hell, cha, deliver. The word for son means he who delivers you from hell, putra. So that's within, you know, the book. So, you know, for various reasons, you know, it is important to have a son. But as we see in the Bhagavad Gita, in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, you know, that issue has been addressed in the first chapter. What to speak of getting to the 12th chapter and it's not understood. Here, chapter 1. See, in verse 41, Arjun said, when there is an increase of unwanted population, a hellish situation is created for both the family and for those who destroy the family tradition. In such corrupt families, there is no offering of oblations of food and water to the ancestors. Prabhupada mentions here, he says, such help rendered to the forefathers is a family tradition, and those who are not in devotional life are required to perform such rituals. One who is engaged in the devotional life is not required to perform such actions. Simply by performing devotional service, one can deliver hundreds and thousands of forefathers from all kinds of miseries. See? So, a boy or a girl going about their normal devotional service, they don't even have to do the ceremony, and they're delivering, the Prabhupada says, hundreds and thousands of forefathers. So what is the requirement to have a son, you know, in that regard? Well, you know, there's one quotation of, I can't remember exactly where it is, that, you know, a good quality devotee, I'm not sure exactly what level, but they can deliver three generations before and after. You know, a higher level devotee can deliver, is it seven? I think seven before and after. It's either 7 or 14. And, you know, very, very elevated, you know, topmost devotee like Srila Prabhupada, you know, practically, you know, they can deliver the whole, you know, universe. But, you know, many, many hundreds of generations. The fact that Prabhupada, you know, his family line, hundreds of generations before and after, all delivered, you know, but like that. So it depends on, you know, the level of the Vaishnava, but they're all, Prabhupada here says, in the Bhagavad Gita, he says hundreds and thousands. So, you know, that's, if a devotee is performing, you know, a reasonable level of devotional service, certainly they're going to deliver their parents and their children and, you know, their grandparents like that. That's you know, not out of the question.
In the explanation of the nectar devotion, the definition of the pure devotion service, there, if a devotee thinks that we had to perform Shraddha or Pinda for deliverance of our forefathers.
Yes.
If one thinks like that, that is not pure devotion service.
Yes.
One can do for a social norm.
Yes.
For the acceptance.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But if one thinks that is a means to deliver.
Yes.
Then it is considered it's not pure devotion.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. A devotee does it. You know, it's an optional thing. But they should not. They should understand it's not required for them. They can do it, you know, but it's, they understand it's not required. But to show others, sometimes it's good that some of them do that. That's right.
Can they think, I'm not a devotee, I'm trying to be devotee, I'm not a devotee, I better make it for any case. Not for any case. They out of the humility, they don't consider themselves devotees.
Well, we should always not consider ourselves, we should consider ourselves to be an aspiring devotee, all of us. But you know, it doesn't diminish the importance of the service we're doing, see? Because even as aspiring devotees, we're doing service that Srila Prabhupada specifically wants us to do. And because we're offering that service to Krishna through Srila Prabhupada, and the, you know, the current and previous acharyas in that disciplic line, then even the smallest amount of devotional service, which may be performed by someone who's not necessarily a pure devotee, but it has immense importance and potency. You know, in our line, everything we are doing is helping a spiritual soul go back to the spiritual world. So there's nothing more important than that. So So whatever we do towards that that's favourable is always of immense importance, everything. And because it's going through Srila Prabhupada, the Acharyas, you know, in that disciplic line, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is very, very merciful. It's all, you know, extremely important. Therefore, you know, we always naturally think that, you know, we're an aspiring devotee and perhaps the service I'm doing is not so significant. You know, my personal contribution may not be as wonderful as some of the other devotees. That's natural to think like that. But on the other hand, because we're doing something within a movement and the collective movement's goal is extremely important, therefore we should never lose sight of the importance of it. And because of that, you get the same effect. You know, therefore, it's a Sankirtan movement. Sankirtan means that collectively our little input connects us to the entire... Our little input becomes absolute with the whole movement's contribution. You know, just like if you're going to build a temple, everyone puts in their little bit, but the net result is the temple goes up. You know, so it's very every penny is important. Why? Because the temple went there. That's very important. So. Therefore, you know, the effects are there. The effects are there. That's the beauty of being situated in the Sankirtan movement rather than we're just all doing our own private devotional service as well. But anyway, you know, so the point was that if people are not reading the Srimad Bhagavatam properly or the Bhagavad Gita properly, then they're not thinking in terms of the Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita, then you can guarantee they'll be thinking in some other term. And that will happen even within ISKCON. Right? So then, you know, so many of the... so many devotees are... and the protection there that, okay, if someone is not particularly... someone is not, you know, spent many, many years studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, things like that, again, because they're part of a Sankirtan movement, if they take shelter of the Sankirtan movement, they get the same benefit. And again, it is one of the things that I noticed that, you know, is different to very early years compared to now. That... you know, almost without exception, when someone, you know, come along to the movement and they wanted to learn the ways of being a devotional service, they would literally just do what they were asked. They didn't speak a lot out of turn and you know, didn't ask that questions out of turn, you know, unless they gradually learn has to be relevant. And... you know, you literally just followed the lead of what the devotees who knew what they were doing, who were studying the books, you know, they know what they're doing, so I'll just follow what they're doing. Like that. There is more of a mood now not to do that. You know, to... you know... Sometimes, so another thing is that, for instance, you know, if devotees were doing deity worship, devotees were doing, you know, the kitchen, devotees were doing Sankirtan. So if you're a Sankirtan devotee, but then, you know, you're asked to do some deity worship, then you follow the devotees who are doing deity worship. If you went into the kitchen, you know, you follow what is their etiquette like that. So you followed everyone according to what needed to be done. Sometimes, what happens, that tendency to really take shelter of devotees is not as prominent. You know, what's more prominent these days is you pick up a few things and then you basically fit in and you sort of stop following people, you just sort of then start, you know, working it out yourself as far as you can, you know, if you'd like to do that. The other thing is, well, they may follow a few people, but no one else. You know, they get a couple of friends, and you know what, a couple of friends, but others not. So, but therefore they're not as protected, and they're not really, they don't understand that in doing that, they're not taking huge advantage. So, for instance, you know, there are devotees here, like, you know, some, you know, been studying these books for, you know, I mean, all their devotional life, but very, very intently, very thoroughly for, you know, over a decade, you know, systematically probably being, you know, assessed and tested, and, you know, doing exams and essays and presentations. If someone doesn't take shelter of one of those devotees, they're really missing out on a lot, because that person can just help them in so many different practical ways. And if someone comes into the movement and just picks one or two friends and doesn't really, you know, take advantage of that, then they're really cutting themselves off from a lot of help, aren't they? You know, there's just so much help, so much good advice they can get, save them a lot of trouble. One of the biggest problems, of course, comes up in the movement is literally how to deal with each other. That's that's the big test. You know, how to make friends, not enemies. You know, how to sort of, you know, treat people nicely, not create offences, and, you know, end up with, oh, I don't want to be with that person, I can't, you know, like that. You know, to actually really be a person who's well liked by everyone. That's the almost impossible thing to do. Right? But to do that, one really, you can't do it by any material skills, any material knowledge, any material qualifications, it won't happen. There has to be, you actually have to take shelter of a devotee who actually is doing that, and only then, and if you don't take shelter of that devotee, it will never happen, you know, because it's not a material thing. It's actually a spiritual quality and a spiritual activity. So, Prabhupada said that, he said, we may not be pure devotees. And, you know, so humble he's including himself. We may not be pure devotees, but if we follow the instructions of the pure devotees, we're as good as a pure devotee. Okay? So a person can walk in the door of ISKCON, and if they actually take shelter of the, you know, devotees throughout the community and take, you know, advantage of their expertise and maturity in devotional service, they can be the most neophyte person, but they can act on, you know, in such a way like a pure devotee would act. Even though they're not pure, they can be protected from all the impurities within their heart and all their bad habits. They can be protected from that and do the exact right thing, you know, without, you know. So that's what Prabhupada meant like that. So that's, again, the benefit of the Sankirtan movement. So I think, you know, that was related to your question, yeah.
Thank you. Sorry, can you repeat your question again?
Sometimes devotees, at least I feel like I'm not a good devotee, and I'm not, whether I'm even a devotee, you know. I can be here performing devotional service, but am I really a devotee? And if I'm thinking of a devotee and my ancestors, because it says that ancestors don't need to perform the these purificatory processes for them. Can we? And Prabhu mentioned that he said that if devotee thinks he needs to perform this, that he's not pure devotee. But is that, you know, like, I'm not feeling that I'm devotee. So if, you know, I'm thinking my ancestors will be in real trouble if I don't do this, because I'm not a devotee.
No, but you're following the pure devotees.
Yes.
Yeah. So, if you're following the pure devotees, then
yes.
The result is there.
You answer perfectly.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. That's the beauty of the Sankirtan movement. You don't have to be a pure devotee, but if you can follow the mature devotees, then you get the same benefit as if you were a pure devotee, even though you're not. You get that effect. That means your ancestors become delivered. Everything that becomes done nicely.
I think it becomes very apparent if you go outside the devotional community and you happen to be on your own, then you really, really struggle to do regular devotional services. And that's where you understand that because you're in a community, whatever little things you do turns out to be devotional service. On your own, you're totally finished in 10 days, 1 minute.
It reminds me of another thing that I see, is that, you know, another thing that happens a lot these days, which didn't really happen so much previously, is that people will come along, they will see devotees doing some particular service, and then they will see what they're doing, and then they will do that, and then they literally sort of don't necessarily need to keep associating with that devotee, or, you know, so many. So, but then what happens is the whole thing just falls in a heap. Okay. So, in other words, we were talking before about the example where sort of Prabhupada, you know, walking down the bank of the Ganges, he leant on the arm of Bhavananda. Strong devotee, but then when he got to the bottom of the bank, he pushed him away, which is what Hiranyakashipu is thinking he's going to do to Brahma. But there's that mentality there, because you know what they fail to realize is that. You know, what to speak of very difficult tasks that are there to do, that take a great deal of maturity and skill as a devotee. Even the most simple task, it is a spiritual activity. And you only do it by even sweeping the floor. Even to sweep the floor as a devotee in ISKCON is done by the blessings of the devotees and the blessings of Krishna. So one may think, oh, you know, I asked the devotee a couple of times, you know, how they do the cleaning up and what have you. And they may then do like that. But there's more to it. There's the blessings of the devotees and the blessings of Krishna. And that simple task can become impossible for them to do without that. And you know, sometimes even, you know, what Prabhupada did would, you know, in one sense appears to be very easy. Someone may think, well, I can do what Prabhupada did, you know. I mean, some members of the, you know, from India have tried that, haven't they? They thought, you know, well, you know, perhaps either, you know, I'll run ISKCON or, you know, start something very similar. But, you know, these things are done because there's a very elevated level of transcendental qualities and pure devotional, unalloyed devotional service to Krishna. That particular part you can't imitate. You can't imitate pure devotional service. You can't imitate surrender, complete surrender, like that. And it is the those transcendental qualities and transcendental state of the heart which allow a devotee to do, you know, the various things that they do to the degree that they have that bhakti, advancement in bhakti. It's not a material activity. So unfortunately, you know, therefore we do see that you know, even though there are some great kirtaniyas and musicians, but sometimes they, you know, despite their music ability, they can't do kirtan anymore with the devotees. You know, it becomes an impossibility for them because it's not just playing the musical instruments. It's not just having the good voice. You know, what they actually have to learn from the devotee, therefore what you have to learn from the devotee is how to be a devotee. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati put it this way. He said, please refrain from imitating the activities of a devotee and try to think like a devotee. You know, is what is in your heart, what is in the heart of a devotee, put that in your heart, that's what you have to learn. Not just the external, I saw them do this, I saw them do that. You actually have to learn what is in the heart, then you can do the service. So, preaching. One devotee went to Prabhupada saying, Prabhupada, I'd like to preach. Prabhupada said, not anyone can preach. You know, we know Prabhupada once, he'd say, oh, look at little Saraswati, little five-year-old, she's preaching. and then here's, an adult coming. Prabhupada said, not anyone can preach. In her heart, there's some, she's following the devotees, the innocence of a child. But Prabhupada detected something else. Prabhupada wants everyone to preach, but not everyone can preach. So what happens is that, devotees, when they come to the temple, they get a great strength in the association of other devotees. What a preacher does is that they leave the temple. And they can go all day, they can go all week, they can come back in a month, they can come back in 6 months, they can come back in 2 years. And they just remain fixed up. Because, everything they've learnt in the temple is fixed up. One time Prabhupada was saying some sloka or something, and then I think he asked another devotee, do you know that? And he said, yes. He said, but do you know it eternally? Do you know it eternally? Do you know that verse eternally? That means wherever you go, does it disappear after 5 minutes? Or how much do you know it like that? Or is it just part of it's an integral part of your consciousness of who you are forever, like that, So what happens is the preachers like that they've learned some things, but it doesn't matter where they go in the world, even if, then it just doesn't leave them. They're fixed up. And that's why not everyone can preach, because, when you leave the temple, what's in our heart is not the same as what is in the heart of that preacher. And therefore, we come in out there, and there's Kali Yuga, and there's the modes of passion, the modes of, tamaguna, and there's so much bad association, and, so much enticement and illusion by Maya, like that. And our heart just, what's in our heart is just no match for what, and therefore we can't preach, we can't stay out very long. We have to come back to the temple and associate. So, that point that when we learn something from a devotee, what we should be learning is what's in their heart, and what is in their heart is giving them all these good qualities and the etiquettes they follow. What is in there, that's what I want to, I want to learn how to get that in my heart and all the other stuff out. That's actually what we should be learning. And some of the other things can be a bit external with that. And this is, what we're trying to... Therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, this core would say, don't try to just imitate the behaviour of a devotee, try to think like a devotee. How are they thinking of that? So... So, although Prahlad Maharaj was born in a family of asuras, he himself was not an asura but a great devotee. Yes, so we read that one about the, even though he was... one is not qualified or disqualified by birth. Anyone can become a fully qualified Brahmana under the direction of a spiritual master. When it says the direction of a spiritual master, every Vaishnava is a spiritual master. You know? Every Vaishnava, every good quality Vaishnava is a spiritual master. They can give shiksha, you know. We may have one Diksha Guru, but there are so many Shiksha Gurus. And good quality Vaishnava is a Shiksha Guru, you know. And as we heard previously, can become qualified Brahmana. What does that mean? As Prabhupada explained in previous purports in this chapter, that means that the quality of goodness, sattva, is fixed up in the heart. You don't become a Brahmana until sattva is fixed up in the heart. It's not just the externals, and the heart is Rajatama. You know, I've seen, I've known some Pujaris, not in this temple, but other temples. The Pujari told me, you know, this is a head Pujari. We respected, like, you know, Bhaktiman. He told me, he said, I don't want to be in that deity room. You know, I have all this stuff going on in my mind, you know, offensive stuff, and, you know, but, you know, you know, he eventually left, but, you know, but for like a couple of years he was in that state. So, Brahmana means sattva is fixed up in the heart. Not that just externally you're doing the deity worship or this or that. It's a different thing. That's what we learn from a Vaishnava, you know, the change of heart. O King, Prahlad Maharaj's good qualities are still glorified by learned saints and Vaishnavas. As all good qualities are always found existing in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they also exist forever in his devotee Prahlad Maharaj. So that is, again, you know, they're permanent qualities. Now, from authoritative scripture, it is learned that Prahlad Maharaj still lives in Vaikuntha Loka as well as within this material world on the planet Sutala. This transcendental quality of existing simultaneously in different places is another qualification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Loka eva nivasatya kalatma bhuta. The Lord appears in the core of everyone's heart, yet he exists on his own planet, Goloka Vrindavan. A devotee acquires qualities almost the same as those of the Lord because of unalloyed devotional service. Ordinary living beings cannot be so qualified, but a devotee can be qualified like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not in full but partially. So,
isn't that Krishna has got 64 qualities and devotees can hope to get at most 55 part of it?
Up to Lord, up to, you know, the jiva, the devotees, up to Lord Brahma, can attain a certain percentage of the qualities of Krishna in minute. And Lord Shiva can achieve that percentage plus a little bit more percentage but in greater quantity. Vishnu more again, and you know, fully. Vishnu fully, he has more qualities of the Lord and fully. Krishna has Lord Narayan, you know, so Vishnu and various avatars. Krishna has four more qualities than Lord Narayan. So the personality of Godhead has them in full. He has all the qualities in full. Lord Shiva, not all the qualities, but to a greater level than the Jiva. And the Jiva has less of the qualities, but minutely.
Likewise, Krishna has the only quality of playing the flute. And what about our mundane, accomplished flute players? Our Acharya also plays flute, I guess.
Yes. Now, what is the exact term that they use for Krishna's playing the flute that enchants the entire universe or something?
Venu
Madhuri. What's that?
Venu
Madhuri. Venu Madhuri. Yeah. So it is. Madhuri is like sweet or attractive, you know, unlimitedly. So you know, Krishna plays the flute. And he can do so, it is so sweet and unlimitedly attractive, it attracts the whole universe. So others can also play the flute, a few squeaks and a few missed notes here and there. You know, some of them fail to attract their girlfriend or their boyfriend, even, but, you know, some of them may get a little bit more, but no one can attract the whole universe. So, you know, it's... It's not just playing the flute, there's a little bit more to it.
Actually, this can be demonstrated by some of the stories that, not good to say stories, but that actually happened, where sages, by the mantras they recite, they can get certain animals to come. Actually, they can make animals come, and then they can get the animals to go. So that is a power.
Yeah.
So that is shown by that. So there's a whole different realm of that.
That's right. So to various degrees, you know. So the Pied Piper, he could attract rats.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So that's a starter.
Yeah, that's a story. That's a Western story.
Yes. Yeah, you know, all these stories, they're attractive to us because they, somewhere deep within the soul, it reminds us the piper, the flute player. There's something there. It's Krishna, you know. As a soul, we're you know, it sparks some primeval remembrance of Krishna, you know. So we're attracted, but we don't quite know why.
We want to imitate him as well, so it's like
both. We want him, you know, Krishna is surrounded by devotees, but you know they're again Madhuri. They're very sweet, you know, very wonderful devotees, you know. So, you know, we can say yes, I have a range of devotees, you know, surrounding me, but. You know, whether that can compare to the gopis and Mother Yashoda. You know, even the residents of Vaikuntha are like in awe of the wonderful qualities, you know, and pastimes of these devotees. So, you know, there's these four qualities, you know, there's a... it surpasses even what can be there in Vaikuntha. Now, this one here... So here, this is an interesting one that... The qualities of the Lord, such as the Lord being all-pervading, here we see that Prahlad Maharaj has that to some degree, that he can be in some places at the same time, which is simultaneously. And we saw also in the pastimes of Bahulasra and Shrutadev where Krishna was surrounded by the various sages and... he decided he would see the king in one place and then go to another province at the exact same time and see the brahmana. And so he went and saw them both at the same time, but all the sages who were with him, when they also went to both places. So,
what is that pastime? Does everyone know that
pastime? Tenth canto. I'm not going to tell the whole story. Now, so here's this quality that the Lord is in. Different places. We saw also with Gorkhasura Das Babaji, right? You know that story that. One time some people come for a blessing and you know, he didn't like giving blessings if they were like, you know, they're asking for material benedictions because it was a disturbance because he was trying to chant Hare Krishna. And one time they asked for some blessing and he was banging his stick on the ground and I thought, oh, you know, we've upset him, and you know, sorry Babaji, you know, we committed some mistake. He said, no, I was just chasing away the goat in Vrindavan that was eating the Tulsi tree, attempting to eat the Tulsi tree in Vrindavan. So that he was in Mayapur. And so that's what, 1,000 miles away or something. How far?
More than that.
More than that, yeah. And so they contacted Vrindavan and they got word back. Yes, that's exactly what was happening. That at that exact time the goat was in and he was somehow... left, you know. So they understood. He was both there in Mayapur and Vrindavan. You know, similarly when he would chant in seclusion, so he had that little, you know, they made a little, tiny little room near where the latrine was. And he would shut the door and be in there. But then someone had themselves a similar little room, you know, made, and he would also chant in there. But Srila Gorkhasura Das Babaji would say, I know what you're doing in there, you rascal. You know, I know what you're doing there, you rascal. Don't you try to imitate like that. I don't know what he was doing. Gorkhasura wasn't very impressed with him. Yeah. So the Lord is everywhere. This is one of the qualities of the personality of Godhead which makes it very hard for people in general, you know, even in India, the Hindus, the scholars, the pundits studying the Vedas, but they can't understand that he's a person because he's everywhere. And the activities, therefore, of a devotee are just as difficult to understand. Therefore, it's described that what, you know, even the greatest scholar cannot understand the transcendental, you know, activities and qualities of a devotee of the Lord. Again, when we do a when we do a ceremony, a fire jagya, then, you know, we ask, you know, Krishna and his Vishnumurti to sit within the sacred fire. And for many Hindus, you know, when I say that, you know, they sometimes say, but, you know, well, God is everywhere. So in other words, you're doing your little ritual, but to me, God is everywhere, you know. So, you know, it's like, do I really need you doing this ritual, you know, since I'm, you know, so self-realized? You know, it's like, you know, it's a in other words, it's a ritual. You know, that why do it? And, you know, there are sections of, there are sections in India, they don't believe in deity worship. And I think some don't believe in fire jagyas or something, you know, or is it they just believe in five yogis but not deity worship? Is that it?
Arya Samaj,
yeah. And it's this sort of concept. But so you can see, you know, I can see when people say that to me that they're really sort of dismissing the ritual, that I sort of have to do it. Grandma's here, she's come over from India, you know, because we've got the baby, you know, and she's going to stay for a few months. So, you know, while she's watching us, we're going to do all the rituals. But, you know, because I'm such a scholar in, you know, Vedic knowledge, of which I've never read any but heard something, I saw the kids watching a DVD and picked up a few things from that. I can tell you that God is everywhere, so I'm not very, you know, we'll do it, you know. So I say to them, yes, he's everywhere, but he's not reciprocating with you anywhere. and then I actually give the example of the queen. I said, you know, that story. I tell them that story, the one I told this morning, that, you know, if the queen can be standing right beside you, but if she chooses not to reciprocate with you, you can't speak to her, you can't touch her, and she just literally, you don't exist. And you can be standing right next to her. And in one sense, her power of authority is throughout her kingdom. But what we're actually doing here is that through bhakti, the Lord who is everywhere will actually personally reciprocate with us, and he will literally face us. So therefore we, you know, we say, Yaha gacha, yaha tishta, yaha sanidehi, yaha sanirujasva, yaha sanbukobhava. So, you know, one time I was doing a ceremony, and I said, you know, so Vishnu is there, and someone said, so which way is he facing? I said, he's looking at me. And they said, how do you know? Because I said, I asked him to. I said, you face, you know, one of them is you face me. So we asked him, you know, you sit here, you stay here for the whole ceremony, and you know, we know that, you know, Lakshmi may call you up, you stay here, you face me, and you please accept our worship, like that. So that's what we're saying. So he does that, you know, so he reciprocates. So although he's everywhere, but he's not, when, you know, otherwise they say he's everywhere, but he's not reciprocating with them. So then, you know, they get a bit of a glimpse. It's, and then they're thankful to have the Brahmana there rather than just listen to their own minds. So, yes, those qualities. So then we see here, in any assembly where there are discourses about saints and devotees, O King Yudhisthira, even the enemies of the demons, namely the demigods, what to speak of you, would cite Prahlad Maharaj as an example of a great devotee. Who could list the innumerable transcendental qualities of Prahlad Maharaj? He had unflinching faith in Vasudev, Lord Krishna, the son of Vasudev, and unalloyed devotion to him. His attachment to Lord Krishna was natural because of his previous devotional service. Although his good qualities cannot be enumerated, they prove that he was a great soul Mahatma. Purport. In his prayers to the 10 incarnations, Jayadev Goswami says, Keshavadrita Narahari Rupa Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Prahlad Maharaj was a devotee of Lord Nrisimha, who is Keshava, Krishna himself. Therefore, when this verse says, Vasudev Bhagavati, one should understand that Prahlad Maharaj's attachment for Nrisimhadev was attachment for Krishna. Vasudev, the son of Vasudev. Prahlad Maharaj, therefore, is described as a great Mahatma, as the Lord himself describes in Bhagavad Gita 7.19. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavan mam prapadyate vasudeva savamiti sa mahatma sudulabha. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. So they know Krishna to be the cause of all causes. A great devotee of Krishna, the son of Vasudeva, is a great soul very rarely to be found. Prahlad Maharaj's attachment for Krishna will be explained in the next verse. Krishna Graha Grihitatma. Prahlad Maharaj's heart was always filled with thoughts of Krishna. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj is the ideal devotee in Krishna consciousness. Now, so we've ascertained that this pastime is taking place in Chakshusha Manu. We've gone through. There's 28 millenniums. Now, we're in the Vaivasvata Manu, and Krishna spoke. Spoke the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita to Vivasvan, whose son was Vaivasvata Manu. And Prabhupada puts that back about 40 million years, doesn't it? Something like that, about, you know, to do those calculate 40 million years. Before the birth of Vaivasvata, was it before the birth or before... what does he say? He says... In the fourth chapter, what does he say about the timing of the Bhagavad Gita? Where does he give that timing? Yeah, it's in the purport. Which one is it? Here it is. So in verse 1, it says, at the present moment we have just passed through 5,000 years of Kali Yuga, which lasts 432,000 years. Before this, this was Dwapara Yuga, Treta Yuga, etc. Thus some 2,500,000 years ago, Manu spoke the Bhagavad Gita to his disciple and son Ikshvaku, the king of this planet. The age of the current Manu is calculated to last some 305 million 300,000 years, of which 120,400,000 have passed. Excepting that before the birth of Manu, so that before the birth of Vaivasvata Manu, the Gita was spoken by the Lord to his disciple, the sun god. A rough estimate is that the Gita was spoken at least 120,400,000 years ago in human society, and in human society has been extant for 2 million years. So Yeah, so it was spoken to Vivisvan some, you know, at least 120,400,000. So before, you know, before the birth of Manu, Prabhupada is putting that. This Manu, the Vaivasvata Manu, it goes back into the Chakshusa Manu, doesn't it? But Prahlad knew of Krishna, you know, back then, in that previous Manu. It says Krishna.
Is it correct to say even Prahlad Maharaj first time saw the Narasimha avatar when he came out of the pivot? Before that, he was just thinking of 400 Vishnu form. The half man, half lion form, even Prahlad Maharaj wasn't aware about him until he came out of the pivot.
Well, Nrisimha is eternal. You know, he may have. You know, it's not necessary that he didn't know of him. You know, but certainly, you know, the point here is that he is a devotee of Krishna, and he sees when you know his attachment for Nrisimha Dev is an attachment for Krishna. You know, just like we have in the Nrisimha Shalagram here. But, you know, I always just think of Krishna. I know it's in the Nrisimha Shalagram, but all my Shalagrams are Krishna. That's like that. So even though, you know, so devotee sees like that. They're all Krishna. You know, we're worshipping Krishna. But still, when he's there in his form of Nrisimha, you know, he has a slightly, you know, there are different moods and different etiquettes. You know, we have Prahlad Nrisimha, Lakshmi Nrisimha, Ugra Nrisimha. We worship Krishna. We know that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna as well. But although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also Krishna, generally we worship him predominantly while we're getting trained up to worship Krishna directly. Even, you know, because the worship of Krishna, if there are incorrect procedure or activities, a lack of standard, one will accrue reactions to that seva apparat. In the worship of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's also Krishna, but there's much more leniency. So, you know, just, you know, although we respect that, yes, oh, that is Krishna, he is Krishna, like that, all Krishna, still, you actually have to take note of the personality that Krishna has appeared in, you know, and worship him in that mood. Just like, you know, on a codicil, there's some debate, isn't there, about who gets grains and who doesn't. So Krishna can, right? Krishna can eat grain. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? No.
Here we don't do.
Here we don't do. In some temples they do. So sometimes, that's because whatever Prabhupada has established, we follow, yeah, I think. So,
Did Prabhupada say that one should have brains and ecology? As it is
at the standard? Here? But or
generally,
everywhere?
Like, what's the standard generally, not what's practiced in Melbourne, but what's the standard generally?
Well, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya chastised his mother for not following equality. So, you know, in his form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wanted to follow. He followed Ekadasi and he wanted his mother to follow as in Chaitanya Chaitanya. So that's his standard. That's from his own words. So, you know, he...
because he's acting as a devotee.
He's acting as a devotee. Yeah.
But he also once requested non-Ekadasi prasada. He also once requested, so it's always... whether we know yes or no from Lord Chaitanya. Because
yeah.
He once requested and with that he demonstrated I can eat.
Yeah, he stole some...
No, he asked once, he asked, I think his parents, he asked if they can get non-Ekadasi prasadam from someone who was, from two devotees who were living far.
Yes, yeah.
And when he went and asked, they were astonished how he knew that.
How
he
even knew, that's right. Yeah. Palambari or something. And Suklambara or something like that.
I think the Suklambara Brahmachari came later. This was, I think, in his younger age, I think.
Yeah, so in that case, how old was Lord Chaitanya then? Didn't he do that when he was a little baby or something? Was he a little baby in that past time? Was he a little...
I had the impression that he was younger.
Younger, yeah. So there's, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, yeah. So different ages, different moods, again, like that. So there you see, even the same person, you have to reciprocate with him according to the age he's in and what have you. But, so yes, yeah, so as I said, I think there's a bit of debate about that because there's, you know, past times like that where he's actually... eating the grains because he wanted the, the prasad cooked by his devotees, you know, whatever it was or something. But at the same time, yeah.
Like if in our temple we don't offer him grain prasadam then but still Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wears a peacock feather also.
He wears it.
Peacock feather while dressing.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's a bit of debate about that as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a few grey areas and our temple is, you know, because we have slightly different standards because Prabhupada came here and said do this and we just follow what he's done. So it may be different to what they've done in, you know, the manuals and newer temples and other places in the world. But
they offer grains to
They offer grains to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Vrindavan, yeah. But they don't do it here. Yeah.
Someone told me that Gaur Kishore Das, not Gaur Kishore Das, but Gaur Govind Maharaj chastised his disciple for dressing his Gaurantai deities with a peacock feather, saying that Gaurantai is a wonderful devotee, so should be wearing a peacock feather.
Yeah, well, although, you know, in
Mayapur, they have peacock feather.
That peacock feather, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, there are a lot of, there's a lot to that. So we won't enter into it now, but... could you ask the question?
I asked the peacock feather question.
No, the peacock feather. Who asked about the grains?
Grains?
Anyone?
You only said Prabhu.
Did I?
Yeah.
I asked myself?
No, you didn't ask, but it came in the discussion.
It came in, yeah, because I think I was giving an example.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was giving the example. Thank you. I'm glad someone's listening. I'm not.
You were describing the difference between everybody's Krishna.
Everyone's Krishna, but you still, you know,
Krishna and Chaitanya.
You can't just do anything. And, you know, there are discussions that if someone puts a peacock feather on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they say, oh, yes, he's Krishna, but you can't do that. Or someone offers him grains, oh, he's Krishna, but you can't do that. So, you know, Although there's different opinions on that, the point is that you can't just say everyone is Krishna and worship them in the same way. At the same time, they're all Krishna. So Prahlad Maharaj, he's a devotee of Krishna, and his attachment to Narasimha, where he treats Narasimha as Narasimha, and yet simultaneously his attachment for Krishna is being manifested in his attachment to, you know, to Lord Narasimha. So that's, there's a consistent feature, because they are all Krishna. So there's a consistent feature of your attachment. At the same time, there are different moods which are accommodated, that variety in spiritual life. So very, very good quote, that one, because you can see that what sometimes happens is that, and I've seen that in this temple as well, is that when devotees, you know, it's Lord Ramchandra's festival, and everyone's celebrating, and some of the devotees are going, you know, it's like, we're Krishna devotees, so we're not so much into that, you know. No, seriously, I'm talking about senior devotees, you know. They're actually chastising you for, you know, almost doing too much, you know, like, okay, this is Ram, you know, but we're not so much Ram Bhaktis, we're Krishna Bhaktis. So, and that's why you can see Prabhupada, and therefore, you know, to make sure that people understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna. So, you know, there may be something similar there, that a lot of people don't accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Krishna. You know, I mean, apart from the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, you know, people may accept Krishna as a Vishnu avatar, like that. They think Vishnu is supreme. They'll accept Ram, but quite often they don't accept Chaitanya as even, you know, a Vishnu avatar. Like, he's a great devotee, he's a saint, or maybe didn't even exist. So therefore, you know, that peacock feather is a symbol that, you know, you understand this is one of the forms. Sometimes when I'm doing a wedding, and I like to introduce people to the altar, and it's the first time they've been in the temple, a lot of them, and I say, you know, here's a form of Krishna, he's playing the flute, he spoke the Bhagavad Gita, which is basically the Bible of India, you know, that's why Krishna is so important, and Radharani is spiritual energy, and then I say, these are other forms of Krishna. Sometimes, if I don't have time to go into it too much, I say, these are other forms of Krishna. And that's all they need to know. You know, Chaitanya, I might say, here's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, here's another form of Krishna, but he established the religion for this age, which is chanting Hare Krishna, like that. But basically, let them know, this is Krishna, this is Krishna, like that, these different features.
There's a verse in Chaitanya Bhagavat where it's mentioned, one of the devotees had a dream of Lord Gauranga and wearing peacock feather.
Right.
So there are some references.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Lord wearing
and see this as a seal. Yeah, so because sometimes Lord Chaitanya did reveal to his inner sanctum of devotees that he was Krishna. You know, there's a Sadbuddha form. You know, that's Lord Chaitanya, Ram and Krishna. So, you know, sometimes he revealed that I am that Krishna, I am also Rama, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So for the, you know, the ISKCON devotees, we understand he's Krishna, but at the same time he likes to be worshipped. you know, as a devotee, so that we learn how to be a devotee, not imitate God. So there's a variety of different features there. So, and we see here Prahlad. He's worshipping Lord Narasimha. He sees him as Krishna. That doesn't mean that, you know, he's going to, when Narasimha appears, he's going to ask him where the gopis are. Did you bring Radharani? Did you? Where his mother showed him. Even the Shringa, you know, you don't worship all the Nishringas in the same way. They're all Nishringa. But there's Prahlad Nishringa, Lakshmi Nishringa, and Ugra Nishringa. Ugra Nishringa, is where Lord Narasimha Dev is in his most ferocious feature, you know. He's very angry. He's fully angry. And so therefore it's understood that, you know, if you approach the Lord for a blessing, you might choose a better time than when he's really angry. My daughters, you know, I've got five daughters. I've always told them, you want to ask me for something, you can ask me whatever you like, but there's only certain times you can ask me. Don't ask me when I'm just about to go to bed. Don't ask me when I've just woken up. Don't ask me when I'm just about to leave. Don't ask me when I've just arrived home. Don't ask me when I'm just about to eat, or while I'm eating, and don't ask me just after I've eaten. Don't ask me if I'm tired or I've been working hard. But anything you want to ask me, you can ask me. So, in the same way, but it actually works, you know. Children, you know, learn this one.
So when does she ask you anything after?
Now, if you want to get what you want, leave those things aside, and it actually works. You know, is you in a good mood? It's not one of those times someone asks you something, you know, you're sort of very charitable, you know. Mm-hmm. Someone asks you, you're like, oh God, you know, pain like that. No, what do you want? No, not even. You know, it actually works. So Lord Narasimha is Ugra Narasimha. He's like that. Don't ask unless you've really, you know, a strict, you know, like Prahlad Maharaj or someone. But Lakshmi Narasimha, when the Lord is with Lakshmi, he's about 50% pacified. Mm-hmm. You know, for generally grihasthas, they can ask. And grihasthas make a lot more mistakes than, you know, brahmacharis and sannyasis. You know, they're a bit more, you know, slightly more, you know, they're doing deity worship home and you've got, you know, little kids running around, dribbling and touching everything. So the Lord, you know, pets running in and out sometimes. So, you know, the Lord's a little bit more lenient, you know. And, you know, he's still giving blessings even though, you know, it's a little bit more difficult. And then Prahlad Narasimha, that's when he's most pacified, you know. So, you know, you see a picture that devotees have and sometimes they put in the car. Prahlad is there, but Narasimha is still ripping Narasimha, you know, Hiranyakashipu, you know, he's still literally in the, you know, he's just in the act of tearing him to pieces. So, to me, although Prahlad's there, you know, it looks like Ugra Narasimha. What do you think? Is anyone? Even though Prahlad is there, he's sort of still literally in the act of tearing Hiranyakashipu apart. So to me, that's actually more Ugra Narasimha than Prahlad. You know, I feel that when they they should make a distinction, and you know, they should make a picture of Narasimha you know, well, I think there are, you know, with Prahlad and, or Lakshmi, but not while he's literally ripping apart, because it appears to be Prahlad Narsingha, but I think he's actually in the mood of Ugra Narsingha. And I tell devotees, don't have that picture in your car. Especially if you're not a very good driver. In fact, you know, I know devotees have put the picture there and they've had an accident. I said, which picture have you got? I said, get the other one.
I have that in the car. Have you? Mayapurna's in my picture.
Yeah. I really feel they should get, you know, a proper Prahlad Narsingha or Lakshmi Narsingha picture, not when he's in that angry mood picture.
why do devotees worship, I mean, the Lord is worshipable in any form, but is there any reason why we specifically make deities of Ugra Narsingha or pictures of Ugra Narsingha and worship? Because...
As I say, because, you know, one form is suitable for grihasthas to work, family members. Others are, you know, very good for, you know, like sannyasis, brahmacharis, who are quite often engaged in a lot of preaching activities, which is very dangerous. And the Ugra Narsingha, you know, the protective feature is, you know, more ferocious. You know, very angry. So, you know, if you're doing a more dangerous activity like preaching, then, you know, and you're very, very strict in your worship, if you fit that criteria, then, you know, worship Ugra Narsingha, you know. So therefore we see some of the sannyasis are going into the communist countries or even the Muslim countries. They'll want, you know, Ugra Narsingha, that, you know, that protective. You know, I have, sometimes I bring the Ananta Sesha, you know, Sankarsham. That's the deity that my spiritual master gave to me. So a lot of the, apart from Govardhan and Sankarsham, basically Krishna and Balaram, the other shalagrams have come through, you know, other sources. But, you know, this, the Sankarsham, literally it's like the head of a snake. You know, it's got the fangs, it's got the hoods of the serpent inside. So, you know, it's, and the mouth is out. So, you know, it's actually quite a scary feature, you know. So generally, that feature of the Lord is a more aggressive, you know, in his protection. And I've told you the story, you know, about the first day that I had that. You know that story? I've told you the story. Yeah. About when I was some... I'll tell you again because, you know... But...
can you tell that story?
I'll tell it, yeah. I've mentioned it to someone, but... I received him here. Shilindra Jumnaswamy was upstairs and... I went up there and he had a little, you know, a new block of soap was in there, perfumed, and he'd taken that and out and he had the shalagram and there was a little, nice, beautiful little box, cardboard. He said to me, what's in there is not soap, but it will cleanse you of your material body. Because Sankarsham, of course, cleanses of you, the false ego, the anger. So, then he showed me and he says this. So he said this shalagram has been worshipped for hundreds of years in Vrindavan, you know, by Vaishnav Brahmanas, like that. And it's Sankarsham. So he gave me, and then, you know, we had a little chat. It was just up near the window up there. And then I came downstairs and I sat in the courtyard and I had a bag because I you know, I'd asked him for a shalagram and I was pretty hopeful that he's going to give me one. So I had a little bag and I put him in just carrying by my waist there. And I was sitting on the other side of the courtyard and Premadonna, remember him? He had the big thick glasses and he had his wife. His wife had a little girl She wasn't very old, like a little baby, but the girl was a bit naughty. And the mother used to smack the girl. You know, she was having trouble with the child. You know, and the child was having trouble with her. And the baby wasn't feeding, and then the baby started, you know, really playing up on the mother, and the mother gave the baby a little smack. So then, in the courtyard was Greg Anderson. You know Greg Anderson?
Mm.
So he's very, he used to come here all the time, get Bishara. He's very tall, he's about 6 foot something, always wears shorts, very big, solid bloke, baldy head, very short hair. Some months after this incident, he killed his own son, stabbed him to death. So he's a very, very violent person. Most people here wouldn't know. I heard some stories of him bashing the 80-year-old man a couple of doors down because he walked past and put his plate in his bin as he was walking away. And the man, a neighbour, came out and said, "No, you can't do that. Put it in your own bin." And so he ended up having, they had a few words, and then, you know, this big fella, Greg, just pushed him over, and then he was even kicking him while he's on the ground, you know, so an 80-year-old guy. So he had, you know, he had a temper, like he wasn't, he'd attack anyone. So anyway, he went storming over to this lady and said to her that, you know, he with his fist, and he started screaming at her, you know, at the top of his voice, of which the baby started screaming her head off in terror. He says, "You touch that baby again and I'm going to beat the hell out of you like this. I'll give you one of these." And, you know, he was the sort of bloke who would do it. So I got up off the seat and I run over and I said, "Hey, hey, you know, you can't do that here. You can't attack anyone here, you know, let alone a woman, you know, with a baby. You have no right. You know, you either sit down, behave yourself, or you'll be removed from the temple." He just become furious, you know. He's like, he turned red and he just clenched his fist and he stormed off. Sometimes when people are going to attack you, they storm off and then they turn around and they come back and get you, and that's what he was going to do. So as he stormed off, I sort of walked over to where the tree was. He was gone. He went down to about the fountain and he turned around, which I expected he would, and he turned around. He was just going to attack me. And I was standing there and I was thinking, you know, like 5 minutes ago I've been given a shalagram shila and now I'm going to be, you know, getting thrown all over the courtyard and I'll probably end up smashing him to bits and take him up to the Maguru. I said, "I've had him for 5 minutes now and I've cracked him to bits." You know, and I was sort of thinking, you know, you know, what am I going to do like that? At this stage, he's sort of coming at me. And he got to about, say, where this table is, so he's sort of within arm's reach, and he just literally stopped dead in his tracks, just stopped dead. And he just turned around and walked off. And I always put that down to, you know, Sankarshan, that, you know, there was some fear in his heart, probably because of the fact that I wasn't really fearful of him. I was sort of like a bit absent-minded, like, you know, like he's storming at me as if, you know, and you usually be thinking, like this, and I'm thinking, like that. So I think that put some fear into him, you know, the fact. And he just turned around and stormed off. It's like somehow he just come to his. But that was Sankarshan, you know, I understood that. That was the first 5 minutes I ever had him, and you know, I knew he's going to protect you from demons. And you remember I was. I was attacked here in 2012, although I managed to defend myself, and so I wasn't really too much hurt. I was more hurt by the reaction of the temple than by that person. But the next day, Govardhan appeared. The next day, my wife arrived, and Govardhan appeared, and I understood one, that I didn't get hurt because Govardhan was, you know, literally on his way, and Sankarshan was there, and I understood that you know, that person would be driven away. You know, Govardhan would put up an umbrella of protection, which he did. So, yeah, you know, they have, you know, and Govardhan, of course, he's very protective as well. You know, he has, you know, Govardhan. When we think of Govardhan, we think of Burfi and little cakes and, you know, because we think of walking around the Govardhan Hill. But he's very protective mood of Krishna, Govardhan, you know. He fended off a full-on assault where, you know, they were going to be killed. Animals, you know, the devotees. So Govardhan also has that mood. He's a very protective. They have him, you know, and it's described that if you walk, circumambulate Govardhan, you never have to fear snakes. And I'll tell you one more story. When I was on the farm here in Underground, one day, not unusual, but I was the only person on the farm. So my daughters had gone off with someone. I think it was Tarini Rupa. We only had a couple of people on the farm and everyone was there. And I walked, you know, from... So my car was back at the house, which is right up the end where Rasa sometimes stays and does her paintings. I started to walk from the temple room down to the ashrams and I just wanted to check that, you know, the doors were all shut and everything like that. And Haridas, my dog, was there. And as I was walking... the dog started sniffing at the ground and I thought, oh, you know, he must have sensed something. And so I looked down and actually right at my feet, I was about to step on the head of a snake. And this was a tiger snake. Tiger snakes, you know, tiger snakes will literally chase you. I've seen it happen. I've seen them chase the kids on the farm. You know, they'll chase you and they'll just jump up and they'll bite you right on the chest. They're really, yeah, they just, they're really, you know, they get that name because they're ferocious. And so this tiger snake was, you know, it was the biggest one I've ever seen. It was from about here to the door and it was about that thick. It was huge. And I was about to stand on its head. My next step would have been on its head, but it saw me coming and it raised up to bite me. And... So, in that moment, I'm looking at him. He, you know, my leg is just within, literally, even lifted up. Basically, was, you know, he could have bitten me 5 or 6 times. Had he bit me, by the time I would have walked back to there, because there's no phone or anything, I'd be dead. I'd be dead. They would have just found me in the paddock, you know, dead. But somehow, he just didn't bite me. He rose up to bite me and then just stopped. And I just, I don't even know how I did it. I sort of, without putting that foot down, on this foot, it had all my weight, I did a pirouette, yeah, and landed, you know, facing, looking back at him. I don't even know how I did it. So you've got all your weight on there and I pirouetted up in the air and then landed facing, looking back. But he had time to strike me, he just didn't strike me. And I merely understood that's the benediction from worshipping Govardhan, that you'll not be harassed by snakes or snake-like people. You'll be protected. They may attack, but it's like their ability to actually cause the harm that you're protected. Just like Indra, he did attack, but his ability to harm was neutralized. See, if Indra never attacked, we never know what Govardhan actually did we? So sometimes the Lord allows the event to happen so that you understand, I've saved you from that. But if it didn't happen at all, in one sense, you know, what, you know, what's God doing all this time? You know, I'm chanting all my rounds. He doesn't seem to be paying much attention. So, you know, so he neutralizes literally the effect of you know, what should have happened to you. So... So here, you know, getting back to this point that although they're all Krishna, that we shouldn't forget. And, you know, the point Gopa Brindesh with that quote, Prabhupada insisting, you know, you put that, you know, peacock feather there, because otherwise in ISKCON there'd be a tendency to neglect the Shalagrams who weren't a Krishna Shila. You know, and once Srila Bhakti Siddhanta says what he was asked, how do we worship, you know, what way do we distinguish the worship of Govardhan Srila, Dwarka Srila, Shalagram Srila? Is it you worship them equally? Same thing. It's Krishna. That's Krishna, that's Krishna, that's Krishna. Not that, you know, here's Govardhan Srila, here's a, you know, a Matsya, you know, vision avatar. Oh, you know, he gets a lesser portion and give more sweets to not like that. Equally. So all Krishna at the same time, we recognize their distinguishing features.
I've got a question. We hear past times where, I think it's in Mayapur, where the deities tell the pujari, no, you offer the sweet to me. Look, there are the other deities stealing away the sweets or something. We hear of these sort of past times. Then what do we make of that? They're stealing away the prasadams
of makers,
or something like that.
So that one of the Krishnamurtis is
telling that the other deities are taking away the prasadams.
Yeah.
All of Vishnumurtis. There is a pastime, I'm not able to read. There is a pastime.
Yeah, so.
And in our ISKCON itself.
Yeah.
That was in Rajapur when they brought the Govardhan. I don't know whether it's the same story, but in Rajapur they brought Govardhan Srila. And Jagannath was complaining in the dream of the pujari. He said, this Govardhan Srila, he's eating all our prasad, all our bhoga, even before he started offering. So that's why they made, because they offered on the same plate, so then they made a separate plate for Govardhan Srila and separate from for
Yeah. But it does show you. But not every Govardhan does that. So, you know, that was in Rajpur. So that temple, that particular, you know, they have to keep an eye on him. You know, not every Krishna steals the sweet rice. You know. So therefore, you know, you do have to worship. They're all Krishna, and you can say they're all Nisringa, but they have each Nisringa Shalagram is a different, you know, worship, different slight mood and reciprocation than the next Nisringa.
It's although there's like you with your daughters, and don't ask me to come out like that.
That's exactly right. One father is different from the next.
And we are hearing the past time, like. About a great devotee like Hanuman, when he comes and tells him that Krishna wants to see you, he says, oh, I'm too old, I can't go. Then he says, oh, Lord Rama is calling, immediately he jumps and he goes.
Yeah.
Why do we hear such fast steps?
Yeah. That's because, you know, here, Prahlad is distinguished as a Krishna Bhakta because some, their principal deity is not Krishna in his form of Krishna, but Ram, Krishna in his form of Ram.
No, but you're telling like here in the temple, like some people keep saying that, oh, we're all Krishna Bhaktas, we're not Rama Bhaktas.
Some are Ram
Bhaktas. Then there's something wrong in them saying like
nothing.
That.
Some are Ram Bhaktas.
Then there's nothing wrong in saying that.
And there's nothing wrong with being a Ram.
Lord Hanuman
yeah.
can
yeah.
say that, can behave in different ways
yeah.
to Lord Rama and to Lord Krishna. Okay, that's
his. Same with Rupa and Sanatan. You know, they had a younger brother, Anupam. And Anupam was a devotee of Ram. And they tried to, you know, get him to be a Krishna Bhakta, but he wouldn't. He said, I know Ram is not different from Krishna, but, you know, he was a Ram Bhakta. He stayed a Ram Bhakta. So his principal deity is Ram. So some people's principal deity is Nisringa, you know, and their attachment to Krishna is secondary to their attachment to Nrisimha. Here the point is that Prahlad's attachment to Krishna is primary. You know. So in the case of Jambavan, Hanuman, their attachment to Ram is primary. Even though they understand that he is non-different from Krishna, their primary attachment is to Ram. Some devotees, their primary attachment is to Nrisimha. But then there are devotees whose their primary attachment is to Krishna. Although in this, you may mistake them in ISKCON as like a Nrisimha Bhakta, but they're not their primary attachment. You may mistake Prahlad as a Nrisimha Bhakta, but you know their primary attachment is Krishna.
Nanda Maharaj is worshipping Narasimha in Vrindavan.
Who's that?
Nanda Maharaj.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays that, you know, he prays to Narasimha, you know, to remove, you know, the different obstacles so that, you know, one day he may be able to, you know, sort of enjoy those, you know, enter into those pastimes of Krishna and that love of Krishna, Prema, you know. So we worship Narasimha like that, you know, that within... If there are obstacles within that prevent me from attaining prema bhakti, engaging, you know, internally or externally in pure devotional service, you please remove those obstacles from my path. So we worship Nrisimha Dev like that, in order to attain Krishna. So that's the difference. When we worship Nrisimha or Ram, is to attain Krishna as our primary attachment. Jambavan, they may worship Krishna to attain Ram. You know. Even, you know, Jambavan, who fought with Krishna. You know, Jambavan, when the Satrajit jewel was found in his cave, he satisfied Krishna with his fighting. And, you know, he took his blessings. He offered him a daughter, Jambavati. But, you know, he's taking the blessings of Krishna, you know, but his primary focus is to always be eternally engaged in the service of Ram. Neither of them, none of them are incorrect, but we should be able to recognize the difference. One, be careful when you see a Krishna devotee who's doing a wonderful job worshipping in the Nrisimha or Ram. You know, be careful not to make some offence. And if we see a very nice Ram devotee or Nrisimha devotee, and that's their primary focus, there's nothing wrong with that. That's wonderful. Then don't make an offence either. But it's good to be able to distinguish, you know, the varieties. it's not all one. As Prabhupada said, you know, Krishna is everything, but not everything is Krishna. So, Krishna is Ram, you know. He says that in the Gita, I am Ram. What is it, I've wielded as weapons, isn't it?
Yes.
I am Ram. I am the ocean. You don't go down and put a peacock feather on the ocean. You know, we don't offer our food to the ocean, Krishna except, you know, we offer to the deer. As Prabhupada was saying, Krishna is everything, but not everything is Krishna. That's where impersonalism can enter into spiritual variety. All right, perhaps we'll just leave it there. See, we did 3 verses today, we did well. but, you know, when you touch on subjects of rasa, you know, you really... As you can see, there's a lot to it, isn't there? You know, rasa and understanding the qualities of a Vaishnava are a very important subject matter. All right then, so we'll leave it there and see you next week. Anything happening next week? Julan Yatra, yeah. So sometimes they have the swing in here, is that right? Yeah, so we may be either in Prabhupada's room or this room here, whichever is more comfortable or whichever is vacant. Sometimes they use both, yeah. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Just get a look on the phone. That was when Lord Chaitanya was a boy and he was sick. And he said, "How get cured if it is like a prashad?" He had 100 jagadish. They were 2 miles away from him.